Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. What will those movie makers think of next? Try this one on for size. A fisheries expert is hired to help a sheik realize his dream of bringing fly fishing to the desert. Why not, right? Today we'll also talk about Angelina Jolie's new film, and this one, Jeff Who Lives at Home, about a slacker who lives in his mother's basement. There's also Thin Ice, which depicts an unscrupulous insurance agent in Wisconsin who is blackmailed by an unstable locksmith. Whatever. Our independent foreign and documentary film critics are Cynthia Haynes, who taught film at the University of Texas at El Paso. Cynthia, good morning.
Good morning,
nice
Steve.
Nice to have you. Steve Walker is a contributing arts reporter here at KCUR. Steven,
how
are you?
I'm doing good, thanks.
And Bob Butler is a longtime movie reviewer for the Kansas City Star. He works at the Kansas City Public Library. He now blogs at butlerscinemascene.com. Bob, how are you?
Oh, man, there are good movies out there. Yay, team.
Yeah, let's go. Well, I think I know I'm sounding like a broken record here, but as we talk about movie attendance again to open this show, but I'm doing it because, you know, movie going hit a 16-year low in 2011, but so far this year it's up 19% compared with the same period in 2011. And if Hunger Games lives up to industry expectations, the figure could jump to 22%. Bob, what's going on out there?
I wish I knew.
Yeah.
You know what? If you've got product people are interested in, then fine. You're not in trouble anymore. And that sounds like Econ 101.
Yeah.
But it is.
But it's significant to me only because there were really gloom and doom and the industry is tanking into the abyss, you know, last Christmas and suddenly, you know.
According to the figures you had, things are looking up even without the Hunger Games, and I'm having a hard time buying that personally. I think that's the match that's going to set this whole thing on fire and maybe get people back in the theaters.
There's the post-Oscar bump, too, a little bit. I mean, the box office for Iron Lady and The Artist went up significantly after they did so well, too.
Cynthia?
Well, I think this is good news for theater owners. AMC just spent a lot of money refurbishing their theater on Ward Parkway. And it's an incredible investment that you make, you know, putting in digital technology. I think Jerry over at the Tivoli is doing the same thing.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
So, you know, that's good news for them, and we're happy.
Yeah, okay. How good is The Hunger Games?
I haven't seen it. So.
Yeah.
Cynthia and I disagree on
totally
it.
Totally disagree.
I thought as Hollywood big budget, you know, hype-driven movies go, I found it to be highly satisfying.
Hmm. And Cynthia?
I think absolutely the wrong director made that film. It's cartoonish at times. Our wonderful young actress, Jennifer Lawrence, who was in Winter's Bone. I think if kids want to see a female heroine in a film, go see Winter's Bone. I think that is a phenomenal movie. Kids killing kids. I can't get over it. I just don't see it as entertainment. I'm sorry. And I know the books weren't written for me and the movie wasn't made for me, but it's just too disturbing.
And that's my objection to why I haven't seen it. I find the theme a little disturbing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of surprised you think Gary Ross did such a bad job, because I found that his ability to turn away at the key moment so as not to rub our faces in violence against children was actually pretty effective.
Really, Bob? Do you think that was the only reason he did that, or was to get the PG-13
clearly
rating?
Clearly it was,
but it
works.
Okay.
Sharp disagreement here on The Hunger Games. Let's turn to some films that are opening this weekend. Bob Butler, the first one, The Forgiveness of Blood. An Albanian family is involved in a blood feud.
Yeah, young Nick is a pretty typical teenager. He's chasing after girls. He loves soccer. He texts his friends, and he wants to open an internet cafe. The only problem is he lives in rural Albania, which apparently is like something out of a medieval, morality play. His dad and his uncle kill a neighbor in some sort of feud. The father goes into hiding. The uncle is arrested, and poor Nick is told he cannot leave the house ever, because as the oldest son, he is now a target for the revenge of the other family. This is an interesting movie because while it's talking about Nick's confinement, it's basically in-house arrest, with the occasional bullet whizzing through the front door when you're not looking for it. But his younger sister, Rudina, has to take over the family business. So it's interesting. While his fortunes are collapsing, she's becoming a self-assertive woman, running the family's bread delivery service. And when someone tries to get around it by using a truck to deliver bread and beating her to her deliveries because she only has a horse, she goes into selling contraband cigarettes. So it's a very interesting slice of life. And one thing that makes it tremendously interesting for me is it was directed by an American, Joshua Marston, who about 8 years ago did Maria Full of Grace. This is a guy who has no problem at all immersing himself in a foreign culture, a foreign language, and making it work.
I absolutely wish Marston would make more movies. I mean, he's an incredibly talented filmmaker. The insight that you get into life in Albania is significant and but very entertaining. I mean, this is a great storyteller who cast the right people in the right roles, told a very interesting story, and gave us an insight into a world at least I knew nothing about.
I loved it. I found it really Shakespearean almost. Mm. The way these families are pitted against each other. I love the fact that there was a loophole in this strict Albanian code that allowed his sister to go out and deliver the bread and peddle cigarettes.
Women are off limits, basically.
And Marston's only other movie is Maria Full of Grace. And in both films, he told these great stories about people in dire straits who have limited resources but are resilient and do what they have to do to take care of their family.
Well, you know, it's interesting. He spent the last 8 years pretty much doing high-quality television like HBO series and things like that. And, you know, when you're making movies like he makes them, I don't suppose there are studios beating down your door to hand you money.
And he was a journalist as well.
Yeah. So he
covered the war and, you know.
He's working, he's saving his money, and then about every 6-7 years, he's making a movie.
He's making a great movie. Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
You wonder, what's he thinking in terms of who's going to come see a movie about Albania?
People who love movies.
Yeah, okay.
It's beautifully shot. It's the story, like Cynthia said, is just grips you from the moment it starts, because this is a land we are not privy to, ever. Wow. Unless you've been to a rural village in Albania.
So three thumbs up
for
The Forgiveness of Blood.
And it's at the Tivoli.
I gather we're going to see this name again, and when you talk about your three to see this weekend,
be on my list. Yeah.
Okay, The Forgiveness of Blood, folks. Go see that one. How about Salmon Fishing in Yemen, Cynthia?
Go figure.
Yeah.
If you recount the plot here.
Figure.
You've got a fisheries expert who's hired by a sheikh to realize this dream of bringing fly fishing to the desert. Okay, what could that be?
And this is not a documentary, I should
point
out. No,
it's not a documentary.
Yeah.
What it is, it's based on a book by Paul Torty, which came out in 2007, and it's supposed to be a political satire. Well, it's turned into basically a lightweight romantic comedy, and there's nothing wrong with that. Two very charming actors, Ewan McGregor plays a geeky scientist, Dr. Alfred Jones, and Emily Blunt plays the Sheikh's PR advisor, sort of assistant. And the Sheikh is played by Amar Waked, I believe. I apologize for mispronouncing his name. But he's a progressive sort of new agey Islamic Sheikh who loves fly fishing. And actually, he resembles a very handsome Ben Kingsley.
He is a gorgeous. Let's
he
just
really,
put it that
just
way.
Every time his face is on the screen, he's great to look at. Anyway, Kristen Scott Thomas is really the pivot in this film. She plays Patricia Maxwell, who is an obnoxious press secretary for the not very bright British prime minister. And she's trying to deflect concern about the war in the Middle East. And she finds this very positive PR story about bringing water to the desert. So she gets involved in it. It's very funny. And the film would have been a lot better if it had been played at the speed that Kristen Scott Thomas played her character. Otherwise, it's just kind of a slow story of this developing relationship. Emily Blunt's character's boyfriend is in Afghanistan. Ewan McGregor's character has an unhappy marriage, so you're waiting to see, you know, do they ever get together? And this is supposed to be a metaphor, obviously, about the difficulty of finding love and happiness and swimming upstream, as it may be referred to. And I found it really kind of entertaining, but not particularly significant.
Fly fishing in the desert.
It reminded me a little bit in the tone. Certainly not. It's not as good as, but it reminded me of Local Hero. It had that kind of, you know, people under weird, crazy circumstances, and yet there's a certain, you know, human reality to it. Now I have to disagree with you. I thought Kristen Scott Thomas was the black eye in the whole thing. I kept tripping over her because she was the only one playing it at that manic level.
Right. And the momentum just didn't mesh up. I agree with you there, Bob. I mean, in terms of the way the other characters were played. It was directed by Lasse Hallström, who's a Swedish filmmaker who did What's Eating Gilbert Grape, a terrific movie worth taking a look at again, starring Johnny Depp and Leonardo DiCaprio. He also did The Cider House Rules. And it was probably the right director for this kind of film.
What's the clip we got here?
Well, we have Emily Blunt and trying to engage the character played by Ewan McGregor, the scientist, and get him involved in this crazy scheme.
Okay, salmon fishing in Yemen.
Dr. Jones?
Miss Chetwood Talbot is expecting me.
Yes, it's a bit of a mouthful. Do call me Harriet.
Oh, nice to meet you.
You too, do you want to come with me?
Yes.
Fitz Harrison Price represent the Sheikh's assets in this country. He's a very keen fisherman, so he asked us
water.
If we would... Sorry?
Water, Miss Chetwood Talbot, H2O.
Do you want sparkling or still?
Not for me, for the fish. This saves both a lot of time. Let me keep this brief and simple. Here, it's very cold. It rains a lot.
Mm.
Here, it's very hot.
You're pointing to Saudi Arabia, Dr. Jones.
I thank you for your time, Mrs. Chetwood Talbot. I'll see myself out. Goodbye. Thank you.
And guess what he's just done? Walked into a wall.
A glass.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. On his way out.
I didn't
out.
See this. I missed the screening, but it sounds actually
likable. It's cute.
Yeah, I'll
it's,
probably
it's,
see that
yeah,
this
it's
weekend.
It's a nice diversion.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to Natural Selection, Cynthia Haynes.
Yes, this is a film that won the Jury Award for Best Film at the Kansas International Film Fest, which is a wonderful film fest here in Kansas City. It was also the winner of the Grand Jury and Audience Awards at the South by Southwest Festival and was nominated for two Independent Spirit Awards, including Best Actress for the wonderful Rachel Harris, who was in this film, and she's been in The Hangover and Best in Show.
I should point out this is a comedy about a Texas housewife whose life is changed when she attempts to find her husband's long-lost son.
Right. Well, this is an encore presentation because it was an award winner at the festival. Brian Mossman has scheduled it for a regular run at his movie theater at the Glenwood Arts. And it's a debut film by Robbie Pickering, and it kind of shows. It could have been a lot better. It was a very low-budget independent film. Harris plays a woman married to a very obnoxious older man who refuses to have sex with her because he contends that sex is only for procreation.
Mm-hmm.
And he has a stroke at a sperm clinic. I'm sorry.
Well, he's been there. He's been visiting the sperm clinic for 20 years.
Right, and that's why.
Unbeknownst to his wife.
Because right. That's for procreation.
Right.
Right, not his own, but yeah.
So anyway, she's a crazy woman who sets out to find her husband's 23-year-old son. I mean, he doesn't know how many children he has out there, but they do know about this 23-year-old son. And actually, he's just escaped from prison outside of Tampa. So she goes to find him, and then it becomes a road movie. And it's really, really pretty sweet. But, Bob, what'd you think of it?
Well, I quite agree with you. I think Rachel Harris was terrific in it. I wish the movie had been halfway as good as she was.
Right.
And people would know Rachel Harris if you just Google her. Well, she's on every other sitcom, it
and
seems.
If you saw the first Hangover, she was Ed Helms' mean-as-a-snake girlfriend.
Right. And she's very dowdy and dressed down in this film. You almost don't recognize her, but she's quite good. And the movie is quirky and weird, but I thought it was very funny and very well written, and I recommend it.
And
I was on that jury actually for the film festival,
yeah.
So that was
you
my...
two recommend it. I'm getting sort of mixed.
I'm calling it like a B-C+ movie.
I agree. B+ somewhere in there.
But yeah. I would like to see more movies from Pickering. I think he has great potential.
Okay. Steve Walker, tell us about the film In the Land of Blood and Honey.
Well, this got a lot of attention earlier at the end of December when Angelina Jolie, who wrote and directed this film, got a Golden Globe nomination. And then it has not been released in Kansas City till this week.
Why the delay?
It's a tough movie. It's set in 1992.
Well, the distributor had issues.
The distributor has gone belly up. And
a skeleton
crew consisting of one guy, as I understand
really?
Is trying to secure bookings around the country. There's no money for publicity. It's so...
Yikes.
And I feel bad for her because...
You work on a movie, sell it to some distributor, and then they collapse
right.
on you.
And even with her name, you know, that just is amazing. And,
well,
and I have to tell you...
to a different distributor?
Well, somebody owns it, and they paid her money for it, so...
Okay.
So anyway, it's set in 1992 in Sarajevo. It opens with this Serbian officer dancing in a nightclub with a Muslim woman who's an artist named Ayla, and then there's a bomb. And thus we're taking it right into the heart of the Bosnian conflict, pitting Serbs against Muslims, which resulted in 100,000 people killed, 2 million displaced. Ethnic cleansing is a term that was born in that conflict. And they sort of fall in love, and he's a terrible person, but yet she softens him a little bit. And he keeps her as his own under the pretense in this sort of like concentration camp as the artist on mm-hmm. the property.
You know, I'm not sure he's a bad person. I think he's probably a pretty normal person.
Conflicted.
Who does very bad things in order to stay alive.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is the era when the Serbian army institutionalized rape as a political
right.
means.
Mm-hmm. And it's used twice in this film to devastating effect. And it's, you know, you never feel it's gratuitous. You understand why it's a war crime.
And in fact, in a lot of ways, the Serbian behavior was pretty, looks like something out of a World War II, you know, Nazi
oh, yeah.
movie.
Oh,
although
yeah.
the Nazis may have been more sexually restrained.
Right, right. But the movie is very accomplished. And Angelina Jolie's script is a little bit predictable, I think, at times. But she wanted people to raise their awareness about this conflict. And used this love story as a hook, I think, to keep people in their seats.
It is very complex because you don't know to what extent this woman is allowing herself to be with this man simply in order to survive, and how much of it is genuine emotion. For his part, he seems to really love her, but when it comes to, you know, violating his allegiance to the Serbian cause, he's got problems. So these are real people with real situations.
And he has issues with his father, who is...
Basically is a mastermind of ethnic cleansing.
Right.
His father, yeah.
Jolie made two versions of this film, one in Bosnian and one in English. And we've all seen the English version.
I saw the Bosnian one.
With subtitles, huh?
And I didn't even realize there was an English version.
Yeah.
Well, the one we got was from Redbox, I have to say, for people who use Redbox, it's out there, and it opens tonight at the Screenland Crown Center.
Hmm. And it's worth seeing it on a big screen.
I think it would be on a big screen.
And it is very disturbing. She got a lot of flack for the film. She deserves credit for creating a well-made, very professional film.
Mm-hmm. She had flack for the film because of the violence of it?
And the issues of the relationship mm-hmm. between the two characters.
Mm-hmm.
This did not look or feel like a first movie.
Oh,
no,
no,
it didn't.
No. I told Cynthia that. I said, you know, I want to see more work from her.
Well, she apparently her producer asked her what her next film was, where it was going to be set, and she said Afghanistan. And he laughed, and she said, I'm not kidding.
No, she's not
so,
kidding.
So apparently, wow. But I want to make the point that this is a story with a woman's perspective. And so often we don't get the view through the eyes of the women who are victims of war. And that's what she did, and that was her intention, and she accomplished it.
So all three of you are giving Angelina Jolie props here.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, wow, okay.
I think she's very strange as a person.
Well.
But
yeah.
But I think she's got a lot of talent.
You know what? The stranger, sometimes the better the artist.
I'm just thinking of her, the way she propped her leg outside of her skirt at the Oscars.
You know what? The more I think about it, the more I'm thinking that was an ironic commentary on stardom and, you know,
celebrity.
Sex symbolism, yeah.
Maybe you think it was an ironic
comedy. I'm hoping
comedy.
It was.
Angelina's film, In the Land of Blood and Honey, it opens up today, right? Screenland
yes.
Crown Center. Mm-hmm. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the latest independent foreign and documentary films with Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. If you've seen any of these films or that we're talking about here that have been open for a while, give us a shout, 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Bob Butler, tell us about In Darkness, based on actual events during the Holocaust. A Polish sewer worker in Nazi-occupied Poland hides a desperate group of 8 Jews for 14 months in the rat-infested underground.
I got to tell you, this movie built to what I thought was just a shattering ending. It deeply, deeply grabbed me, and I wasn't sure I was going to like it because, oh boy, another Holocaust movie.
Well, that's sort of how I feel sometimes, yeah.
It was directed by Agnieszka Holland, a great Polish director who's done everything from The Secret Garden, a children's movie, to Europa, Europa, which was about a Jewish boy pretending to be Gentile so he could get into the Hitler Youth. So this is kind of familiar territory for her. It's based on a true story of a guy named Leopold Socha, who is a sewer worker who had been spending his days ransacking the homes left behind by Jews who were taken to the ghetto and stealing everything he could. One day in the sewers, he discovers a bunch of Jews who have slipped out of the ghetto and are hiding there while everyone else is shipped off to a camp. And he's tempted to turn him in for the reward, but he realizes that he can make more money if he milks them for all their jewelry, all their money, them food and flashlights, and then he'll turn him in for the reward. Well, what can I tell you? The guy realizes there are people down there after a while, and at the end of the movie, there was what I thought was an incredible epiphany where he introduces some of these people as my Jews.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
It was almost an ownership moment. These are my people.
Which to some Jews was offensive. I have Jewish friends who were offended by this movie. And that
seriously?
Very
really?
Yes.
Huh.
Well,
yes.
it's about a guy who goes into something for all the wrong reasons and then discovers his humanity halfway through.
Right. That's exactly what it is. And he's Catholic, and it's complicated by his best friend he went to elementary school with is a Nazi officer who's kind of overseeing the destruction of this town. But he does warm to these people quite a bit, and helped by his wife, who has these wonderful conversations with him. Helping him see the humanity there.
I gather living in the sewers can't be a whole lot of fun.
Right. And ironically,
how does that come
ironically,
through?
This movie is beautiful.
You know what?
It's a terrible situation. There's no doubt. Her eye and her cinematographer's vision, the lighting, the way it plays against the shadows of the tunnels, and it's gorgeous.
This is a very dark movie, but you always see what you need to see. The lighting is just so precise that you can, in a scene that is pitch black, you will see an outline of a profile of a person's face.
Yeah,
and it tells you what you need to know. It's great.
Mm. How many folks actually lived down there during the war?
This is a group of about 20, I think.
It's eight, I think.
Well, it's reduced to eight by the end.
Ultimately. But for 14 months.
This film was nominated for a foreign language Oscar. And Cynthia, did you see it?
I did.
And?
I did. I don't know. I have very mixed feelings about it.
Because
I really do. I think it was very well made. I think she's a great filmmaker, a great storyteller. But again, looking at it from another perspective, maybe it wasn't the film that she intended it to be for some people.
Mm-hmm. In the sense that
it offended some Jews.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I understand that, Cynthia. I mean, if you think about The Help being a story about black strife in the South told through a white girl's eyes, I think you're saying that maybe your friends saw it in the same manner. There's a story about what Jews had to endure in this town in Poland, but it's told through the eyes of this Catholic person. I don't know. Is that sort of...
Well, what is Holland up to here? She comes from a country which was staunchly Catholic and fiercely anti-Semitic for centuries and found in Nazism the excuse to go nuts on all of these prejudices that had been part of the culture since forever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for her, it was very much about Polish Catholicism and dealing with this demon of the past.
Hmm. Okay, that's In Darkness, and it plays at the Fine Arts Theater, right? Okay.
It is, yes.
And then, Steve Walker, we need to talk about Kevin.
We do. Do we have time before the break?
Let's take time before a break.
Okay.
A suspenseful psychological drama that explores the concept of nature versus nurture.
Oh, I suppose. Tilda Swinton plays a woman who is racked by survivor guilt as her son. And we get little glimpses of this through the film, so I'm not spoiling anything. Her son commits a mass murder. And she is left in the same town where this happened, trying to get her life back together. She's, devastated, living in this little house, and the townspeople know it and slap her on the street. And then we kind of flash back to her and her husband, played by John C. Reilly, from the moment the baby's born. And we kind of then, the movie juxtaposes the child rearing that occurs, and this kid ends up being a monster. Played by three different actors.
Who are terrific.
They're all good.
Even
yes.
as a toddler, she's looking at him going, roll the ball back to me. What is wrong with you?
How do you get a two-year-old to express hatred
I know.
So efficiently?
Oh, I know. And he shrieks all the time. At one point, she goes out on the street to a construction site where they're jackhammering the street so she can get relief from this baby screaming.
Oh,
I kept thinking this was the bad seed for the age of Columbine.
Wow, but Tilda Swinton is one of the best actresses working, And just watching her deal with this situation that she had no control over. She's not a bad mother. This kid is just, kids are monsters.
And
sometimes.
She's trying to love this kid, and every effort is rebuffed.
Mm-hmm. And we have a clip to this film, right?
Yeah, we do. Do you remember, Cynthia, what we're using? We have to set this up. They're having dinner at home. This is the teenage Kevin, and something's happened at home that leads you to think his violent streak has kind of taken root within his home.
From "We Need to Talk About Kevin." I guess we do need to talk about Kevin. Yeah.
So, Kev, Mom had something that she wanted to tell you.
I wanted to thank you for calling the ambulance.
And
I was concerned that you might be feeling responsible.
Why's that?
Because you were supposed to be looking after her.
We just don't want you to blame yourself.
No, I don't. I mean, I never said I did.
She's going to need a glass eye, Kevin.
So we would appreciate you looking out for her and any name calling.
You don't really remember being a kid much, do you, Dad? Celia's just going to have to suck it up.
John C. Reilly, weakest link in the whole movie. Terribly
really?
Miscast in that role. Same situation in Carnage. He is just not the dramatic actor that they needed for either of those parts, but especially this film.
So, Steve, you were sort of high on this, though.
I think it's wonderful. It's directed by Lynn Ramsey, who's done some – she's a Scottish director, has made some wonderful, gritty films, and here she's shooting in America for the first time. And Tilda Swinton, as I said earlier – I think you cannot go wrong with anything she's
in. It's worth the price of admission just to see her performance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't you think, Bob?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's kind of the way I feel about it. It's a downbeat movie, no question about it.
Oh, sure.
But it certainly opens a Pandora's box of questions about whose fault is this.
Well, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation here about the latest independent foreign and documentary films. We'll talk about Jeff, who lives at home, Thin Ice, W.E., and a whole bunch more. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star. And you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's discussion about the changing face of Johnson County, you'll find that in the weekend to-do list at kcur.org. Monday on the program, the hidden influences behind how sports are played and games are won. The game we're playing today is with our independent foreign and documentary film critics, Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. We're talking about some films that have already opened around town. This next one is Jeff, Who Lives at Home, Bob Butler.
You know, I really kind of fell in love with this movie, and I don't know. Oh, I see faces reacting in a bizarre manner around the table.
Oh, boy, did I not fall in love with this movie.
This is a movie by the Duplass brothers. They are known for what has been dubbed mumblecore, which is low-keyed, shuffling slacker comedy, basically. They have a couple of interesting films, The Puffy Chair and Baghead. But I think this is their most successful piece of work, and I thought it was a interesting slacker comedy with mystical implications. Okay. Here's the premise. Jeff, played by Jason Segel, is a 30-something slacker who lives in his mother's basement, smokes pot, and as the movie begins, is rhapsodizing to himself about all the implications and how important they are in M. Night Shyamalan's Signs. That's the movie, of course, where Mel Gibson and his family ignore all these signs around them, which in effect provide the key to disrupting an alien invasion of Earth. And Jason is talking directly to the camera and telling us all about it. And you're going, your jaw's going, this guy is so out of it. And then the Duplass brothers give us a story that shows that M. Night Shyamalan was absolutely right. Although there is no alien invasion in this one. This is sort of a road trip movie within one city, Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He's sent out on an errand to get some wood glue to do some work by his mother, Susan Sarandon. He hooks up with his brother, played by Ed Helms, a real jerk whose wife, Judy Greer, may be messing around with another fella, not that anyone in their right mind would blame her. Mm-hmm. And the two brothers head out to try to track down the truth about the wife. Now, I know that doesn't sound tremendously promising, but what's interesting about this movie to me is that all the signs that Jeff stumbles across during the day, in the end, actually add up to something. Is this a great movie? No. I just thought it was a very funny, whimsical, silly, but on an odd level, moving comedy. Now, let the games begin.
Cynthia?
Haven't seen the film.
Aw.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. Well, Steve Walker was grimacing. He just stepped out for a moment, but I gather he wasn't real crazy about it,
well,
right?
Well, here he is. He went out to sharpen his fangs.
I went out to just remind myself that there is humanity on Earth, because this film is about nothing. It's a nothing movie about nothing.
Okay.
Susan Sarandon is embarrassed and should be embarrassed to be in it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. She was terrific in it.
I don't understand the 3.5 stars in the Kansas City. Anyway, I hated it.
Oh, okay. We have a clip here, Robert.
Well, what we've got here is Susan Sarandon as the exasperated mom trying to get her slacker son to get to work.
Okay.
Hello?
Mom?
Jeff?
Hi.
You know you're supposed to say hello when you pick up the phone.
Yeah, I know. I thought that maybe you were somebody else, but you're not.
What do you do in the basement? You're not cleaning it.
You really want to know? You didn't like it last time we had this.
Okay, no, you're right. I don't. Okay. Did you get the wood glue?
What are you talking about?
I left you a note on the kitchen counter.
I haven't been upstairs.
One of the shutters on the pantry is broken, and I need you to fix it.
You know, I'm kind of busy right now, so...
All I want for my birthday is for you to get your ass off that couch, and you get on the bus, and you go to the Home Depot.
On the couch.
You come home, you fix the shutter before I get home, or you're going to find someplace else to live.
I think it's about the fact that I just don't have any interest in what 30-year-old potheads who live in their mom's basements have to say about anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I get that. And Bob does.
Well, what are you saying, man?
Yeah. Okay, differing views on Jeff who lives at home. Cynthia Haynes, tell us about Thin Ice.
Yes, this is a Fargo wannabe. That's how I describe it. It's about an unscrupulous insurance agent in Kenosha, Wisconsin, who's blackmailed by a very strange character played by Billy Crudup. It was directed by Jill Sprecher, and the basic premise here is nothing is as it seems. It's the story's told in flashback. Greg Kinnear plays this insurance agent who's basically a con artist, who's in financial trouble. He's going through a divorce, and he lives above his means, and he meets a young agent at a regional insurance convention. And he offers to hire this guy. He sees an opportunity to make a buck because this guy knows people in the area, knows people in this neighborhood. And Kinnear's character thinks, well, I can, you know, get him to buy insurance. Then is introduced to an eccentric retired farmer played by Alan Arkin, who's played the same role over and over and over again for a very long time, who happens to own a very valuable violin worth about $25,000. And Billy Crudup's character gets involved. He's a locksmith. He installs a security system. And I really can't reveal any more of the plot, because if I do, then it just sort of blows the whole movie. At the end, I hate this when this happens, at the very end of the movie, they try to wrap everything up within 30 seconds. And you're going, wait a minute, give me a chance. Let's see. Now, you're saying this guy is really doing this and this.
Yeah.
And, again, nothing is as it seems. And while I'm watching it, I'm thinking Fargo was so much better. And I was thinking of another movie called A Simple Plan, which is also really worth watching.
Movie.
So
this
is not in that same category, but similar premise.
It's ably acted enough. I think Kinnear's fine. Billy Crudup's good.
Yeah.
But I had Fargo Wannabe as the first thing I wrote when I left the theater. It's just likes the cold. It's attracted to that contemporary film noir kind of feel. But again, at the end, it's like everything you've seen has been sort of a lie. And you're kind of like, okay, this is the director just with me, you know?
Yeah. Bob?
I'd haven't seen it.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Lucky guy.
Yeah. So you wouldn't waste your time.
No, it's not very good.
Okay, so skip Thin Ice. Okay, W.E.
W.E. is a movie about Wallace Simpson and the King Edward VIII scandal of the 1940s, whereby he married and fell in love with this divorced woman and became king, and then the English countryside and all of the other royals decided it's not probably not a good idea for him to be married to a divorcee, and so he abdicated and left it the throne to Colin Firth. His brother, who Firth played in the King's Speech last year. But this story, directed by Madonna, by the way, and written by her, and she has some skills too, I think, is juxtaposed with a modern story about a young woman who used to work at Sotheby's auction house, and she's obsessed with the Wallace and Edward story. And Sotheby's is about to have this auction of all of her furniture and jewelry and that kind of thing. So, and she's in a horrible marriage with this abusive psychiatrist, I believe. And so it kind of juxtaposed. She kind of goes to the auction house, looks at all this stuff, and imagines, what would it be like to be loved that much? And I think she even says that at one point. So we follow the Wallace Edwards story while also this contemporary story. And I have to say, Madonna, it's not the greatest movie ever made, but it's certainly watchable. Andrea Riseborough, who plays Wallace Simpson, looks exactly like her in several scenes.
And she's the best thing in the movie.
She's really quite good. And Madonna doesn't, like Madonna would do maybe, there's a scene at a party in the 1940s where people are just bored out of their minds. They're watching Chaplin, I think. And they said, let's dance. And they put on music and it's the Sex Pistols. Without any comment. And you go, oh, well, that was fun. That's a fun idea. And they're up dancing at the party. And then it goes back to being a traditional movie in every sense of the way.
What do you make of that?
Oh, I thought it was great. I went, oh, my God, they're dancing to the Sex Pistols. And it's 1940. I just thought it was hilarious.
Funny. Cynthia?
I thought it was very lightweight. It could have – I just didn't like these two parallel stories running simultaneously. I wish, in fact, it had just been about Wallace and Simpson.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just sort of not really great reviews for this one either.
I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I know Kim Noble, who was raised across the pond, found it quite enjoyable.
Yeah, and we have a clip here.
Yes, it's a party, and the two of them are flirting.
Oh, yeah, right. They've just started to meet.
Okay, from W.E.
How do you find living in England, Mrs. Simpson?
I love it, except for the lack of central heating. I'm always cold.
Maybe you need someone to keep you warm.
Isn't that what husbands are for?
I don't know. What are husbands for?
You might have to marry someone to find out, sir.
And how do you find marriage, Mrs. Simpson?
Everything's a compromise, isn't it?
Doesn't sound very romantic.
Romance. That's another matter altogether, Your Highness.
Are all American girls such good dancers?
I wouldn't know, sir. Haven't danced with many.
That's from
W.E. It's playing at one of the Glenwood screens.
Okay. If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date, and we're talking about the latest independent foreign and documentary films now showing. Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler are here. And now for the latest from Will Ferrell, who just announced the other day he's going to come back and make Anchorman 2.
I'm excited.
Which ricocheted through the newsroom with great excitement. This film is titled Casa de mi Padre.
It is, and it's on our show today because it's in Spanish.
Go
and
figure.
Will Ferrell.
Foreign language, yes.
Will Ferrell plays a lackluster son of a Mexican ranch owner who's trying to get his dad to like him, and his younger brother comes back to the ranch, and he's a drug dealer, and he's has a rival drug dealing war with this other drug dealer. And the funny thing for people who know Mexican films, the two actors from Y Tu Mama Tambien, Gael Garcia Bernal and Diego Luna, are having a blast in this movie playing these two drug dealers that clash. The movie is made as if it had a budget of $89. Because you'll see things like scratchy scenes, jumpy editing. There's supposedly the shamanistic white tiger that gives Will Ferrell some spiritual guidance, and it's obviously a big puppet. And so it's kind of a play on a telenovela almost. But I have to tell you, watching Will Ferrell try to wrap his lips around Spanish, which he does, he never breaks from that, is very funny. I mean, I have to say I did laugh quite a bit.
Now,
he is something.
I haven't seen it, but it's a Will Ferrell movie. They didn't know what to do with it. They didn't how to promote it. It's showing at Barrywood's 24, an AMC theater, only place in town. Actually, I think it opened in Lawrence today, but
Will Ferrell doesn't have to do things like this, and he made that wonderful little movie last year.
The one about the guy who got Everything Must Go?
Yeah, Everything Must Go. Will Ferrell could only do the same kind of films over and over and over, but he doesn't.
No.
He just thought this would be
a blast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a cheapo grindhouse movie. Fake backgrounds. They're hiding behind this rock, and it's obviously a painted backdrop right behind them. Every time Bernal shows up on screen, he's the villain. They show his white cowboy boots first, then you hear the sound of rattlesnakes.
Yeah.
Such a cliched thing, but it's funny, and they're having a blast with it.
That's Casa de Mi Padre from Will Ferrell. Coming up in just a few minutes, Greg Eklund, KCUR sports reporter, is going to join us from New Orleans, the site of this weekend's Final Four. Steve Walker, tell us about Rampart.
I'm going to acquiesce to Cynthia, actually.
Well, this is the movie that won't go away. First of all, it wouldn't come to Kansas City, and now it won't leave.
It's about bad cop on the ropes and with quite a cast, right?
With Woody Harrelson. He plays this really, really bad, unstable policeman in Los Angeles. But get this. We've got Ned Beatty, Ben Foster, Anne Heche, Cynthia Nixon, Ice Cube, Sigourney Weaver, Robin Wright, and Steve Buscemi.
Wow.
An incredible cast.
That's right.
There was talk that, in fact, Woody Harrelson, who I think is a wonderful actor, he's so underrated. He really, really is.
Underrated because he played Woody for so many years on Cheers?
Right.
Or?
And he always finds interesting films to do and that test his dramatic acting skills. And this is one of those movies. There was talk during the Oscars that he was going to be nominated for Best Actor. But the film didn't get proper distribution.
Right.
Wasn't here for the longest time. And now, it's been playing for a fair amount of time here in Kansas City.
Woody Harrelson gives a great performance in this. He is not a likable guy. This is not a happy-go-lucky person. Mm-hmm. And the movie's very downbeat and grim. He's sort of put on trial, in a sense, and taken off the force because of his treatment of a Mexican car. They have a car wreck, and Woody goes ballistic, and it's, like, very topical if you think about what's been in the news all week. And just watching Woody kind of implode from within as his life goes to hell in a handbasket. It's quite a performance.
It's an all-star cast. Does that sort of work out?
Yeah, it works. I mean, it's quirky casting. Mm-hmm. Cynthia Nixon and Anne Heche play the mothers of his two children, and they live together, but they're not a couple.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it didn't make that much sense, but
didn't have
Harrelson's
to.
Great.
Yeah.
Then there's this next film, Declaration of War, Steve.
Well, it's just a wonderful movie. It's gone from Kansas City. It played here 1 week. It's available on demand. French film about a couple dealing with the fact that their kid gets cancer, their toddler. But it's a movie that's a celebration of life.
It's very much about the parents and what they go through. It isn't the poor kid.
Oh, no. It sounds downbeat, but it's fabulous.
And it's semi-autobiographical. Mm. In fact, the filmmaker lived this story.
And plays the female lead.
The lead characters' names are, believe this, Romeo and Juliet.
It left Kansas City too soon, but it's available on demand, and I just wanted to mention it today.
Yep. What's coming up locally here?
Well, the library's got a couple cool things going on. April is, of course, the centennial of the sinking of the Titanic. So on Mondays at 6:30 at the library down in the film vault, we are showing Titanic movies, but not James Cameron's Titanic because it's coming out in 3D and who needs it anyway? Besides, we like to close before 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we're showing the 1953 Titanic with Barbara Stanwyck, the unsinkable Molly Brown, a musical, of course, Raise the Titanic. I don't want to go there. Ghosts of the Abyss, which was Cameron's documentary about going down to the Titanic and filming it, and A Night to Remember, in a lot of people's books, the best Titanic movie ever.
I remember that movie from childhood, watching it on television.
I do, too.
Yeah.
We have another film series on Saturdays at 1:30, Paul Mazursky movies. It's called Love and Laughter. Mazursky is a really, I think, underrated. He's not a great director, but he's underrated because so many of his movies were good. And we're going to be showing Next Stop Greenwich Village, An Unmarried Woman, Down and Out in Beverly Hills, and Scenes from a Mall. Now, and put this on your calendar, folks. May Day, International Workers' Day, Plaza Library, 2 p.m. we're screening Battleship Potemkin with live music by the People's Liberation Big Band. Does that sound like fun?
It does.
Yeah. Hey, and Cynthia, real quickly, In Search of Haydn.
Right. Jerry at the Tivoli is doing some very interesting things. He's bringing in the director of that film, who will be at the screenings April 2nd and the 3rd, same filmmaker who did In Search of Mozart and In Search of Beethoven, with performances, interviews shot in HD. Supposed to be a terrific film.
I want to thank you all for coming in today. That's Cynthia Haynes, Steve Walker, and Bob Butler. Thanks for all the updates.
Thank you.
You guys.
Yes,
sure appreciate
sir.
It. Okay.
There's good stuff out there.